Life support is nominal. The oxygen danger indicator level is yellow. Please remember that this is a non-smoking pirate ship.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to GameIndustry.com's The Gin Lounge. I'm John Breeden, your chief lounge lizard and your host for this episode of the show. Joining me today are Michael, Neil, and James, and we're going to be talking about what's hot and what's not already this year. So, many of us have been busily playing some of the games that have already come out. Welcome to the lounge today, Michael, Neil, and
Hello.
James. Thanks
Hello.
For joining me. So, lots of stuff this year. Now, this point of the year, I mean, we've all been in the game industry for a long time, and this time of year, I mean, we sometimes refer to it as the doldrums. You know, it's after the holiday season, but it's before the summer releases, and there's not a lot that usually comes out this time of year. It's kind of a boring time in the game industry, but 2015 has been a little bit different. There's a lot of cool stuff that's about to come out or that has already come out, so we just want to talk a little bit about some of that stuff. And why don't we start with Neil. Neil, I know you are working on the review of Dying Light, which looks really cool. It's the new zombie game out from Techland, which is Techland's an interesting developer. They've had quite a history. They've made some really good stuff, and they've made some really kind of lukewarmish stuff.
Yeah, and so with Dying Light, it is one of those things where zombies, I'm not sure if everyone's noticed, but horror creatures come in cycles. Vampires have a phase, then werewolves, then zombies, and then when one gets bored, the other one picks back up. So zombies are kind of, at this point, kind of on a dying end of their popularity because it's been just so run into the ground. So it's hard to come up with a new zombie game where it's like, oh, hey, it's people walking around eating people. Who'd have thought? But, Dying Light, it actually set a new standard for zombie games. It really did. It's first person, so and you can tell like the Dead Island reference, like the influences there. But like I said in my review, Dead Island was more kind of paradoxical and oxymoronic because you got ugly zombies in beautiful paradise, you know. But this is like this destroyed city, and you're being chased nonstop. You're having to use parkour or free running because a lot of times you just can't fight how many are there. You can't just walk in and just start swinging your sword nonstop because you'll see one zombie and, hey, I got that. You walk around a corner because you still see him, and then there's like 14 others there staring at you. And it's like, okay, I'm going this way now.
And they can chase you on this one too. Oh, some of them are pretty
fast. It's not they can. They will. They will track you down, so you better start climbing roofs. And
can they climb too? Are they like zombie parkour masters out there?
When it gets dark, there are certain zombies that can jump up on like a small ledge if you're up there. But it's not a frequent thing. And the thing is though, you know, the whole point is, oh, it gets dark. A lot of people think, oh, it gets a little bit dark. Oh no, you can turn the brightness up max on your, screen. You still can't see into the dark. You just got your flashlight, so if you walk around, nothing, turn around, zombie staring at you, and you just freak out, you start flailing, and it's, between the music, it's a very horrifying game, and the realism is just stunning.
And it's a totally open world, right?
Absolutely.
And you talk about it getting dark. It kind of goes through a natural daylight cycle, so if it starts getting dark, you can, like, trying to head for a safe place or something.
Right. I mean, like, I think it's the first like one or two missions is scripted, but after that there are day night cycles that just why you may be doing a mission. If you take too long doing it, it starts to get dark and you don't want to stay out at that time. So you usually sprint towards the nearest safe house you can find, normally dodging about anywhere between 40 to 170 zombies along the way. I mean, there was one, I was trying to find a safe house, took a wrong turn, end up on this main street. I'm like, okay, there's 1, 2, 10. Okay, no, I'm not even. I stopped counting after 43, and I just bolted.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. Sounds like a lot of fun.
It is, but it's intense. It really is.
All right, man. I'll have to give it a try. So it seems like we're playing a lot of spooky stuff. James, you just did a review of Decay the Mare, which was like just looked like an insane horror type of game. Would you consider that more survival horror, or was that more of an adventure game with a horror theme?
I'd say it's more adventure gamey because it's kind of got like a point and click interface. So it's, I mean, I've always had a bit of a trouble with the term survival horror. I just kind of say horror. Like, I don't really split hairs over it, but it's much more going for an adventure game kind of feel to it. It's quite slow paced and a bit more subtle in the way that the horror's achieved. It's very much about the environments and just being an environment which is just a bit surreal and a bit creepy and just kind of, you know, sort of allowing the player to kind of scare themselves almost with like the odd jumpy moments kind of laid in. You know, and it's kind of going for a more psychological approach. It's interesting because, like, there was an original series just called The K, which I think was, like, late 2000, like, 2010, something like that. And that was a great series, but it was only on, for a while, it was only on the Xbox Live indie game service. And due to the kind of clutter that that service became, it kind of got lost a little bit. And so with The Mare, there were two episodes already, I think, like, about a year or two ago. And then they joined with the publisher to release the whole thing and the new episode on Steam. So now it's just one whole game, and thank goodness for that.
Oh wow! So okay, now the what was the? I remember the Xbox Live. I mean, the Xbox, you know, indie service came out, but it was basically just hard to find anything on there, right?
It was what? Sorry, on the indie game service. I mean, because I kind of tried to wrestle with that service because I was like, okay, that's a really cool idea. But you could only, unless you, that's the thing, is that a lot of the time you didn't know the game you were looking for because you're often looking for new things. So you could only really, like, filter it out by going, oh, top rated, most sold. And then you just have to scroll through, like, literally every game and get up the previews and then do that. And, you know, I can't remember how I found The K and all of that, but, you know, I just kind of looked at it, thought, okay, why not? And then it actually turned out to be a really good horror game, actually. So, you know, I was quite surprised.
Oh, wow. Okay, that sounds pretty cool. I love horror games. It's probably one of my favorite genres, for the most part. So I'll definitely check that out. James, I want to circle back to you in a moment and talk about, another episodic game that you're playing.
Yep.
But, Michael, you have been, I know you always are like, I'm playing Destiny, but recently you stopped playing Destiny and you started playing another game. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, so I'm playing Final Fantasy for the PlayStation 4, and while you can play with PC players, and there's an obvious difference between who's playing PC and who's playing with the PS4, because the control scheme, you can play with the PS4 just fine, but it's slightly harder. Okay, I would never do the healing classes with just the controller. That'd be too much. But I'm playing that. I'm enjoying the heck out of it. I joined a bunch of my Destiny friends who, like me, have all decided we just kind of had enough, you know, bashing our head against the wall with the most recent Destiny hard mode raid, and just said enough is enough, and we're moving on, enjoying our time better with a game that actually has a story, and we can interact with more than 16 people at a time. So, yeah.
The history, Michael, of that game is that it launched like 2 years ago or something like that, and it was like really bad, and now it's kind of relaunched. So it's not new, but it is new, right?
So the relaunch is new-ish. It's like a couple of years old. I think it started in 2013 was the relaunch. It launched in, like, 2011, and the launch was so spectacularly bad that they had to completely trash the entire old game and rework it from the top to bottom, which is a good thing. I'm glad that they did it, and it's an amazingly fun game. And while it had its issues at the original launch, the game since then, with the newer, it's called A Realm Reborn, the relaunch has been spectacularly well so far. So it's just a lot of fun. And yeah, I mean, it's a typical type of MMO. You got your hot bars and your things like that. You know, you have to watch sort of the the green poop on the ground. You have to watch for that. And
what's the green
poop?
So
it's if for non MMO players, there's always a standard. It's pretty much a standard mechanic where if you see something on the ground, it's usually going to kill you. So stay out of it.
Oh, it's right. It's a spell or something that's activating or whatever. Right, I gotcha. Okay, cool. That sounds like fun. I know you've been playing it.
It's only for about the last week, and I've been power leveling, which is being a veteran MMO player. It's been almost 10 years doing it, so it's nothing new for me. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. So yeah, we're actually trying to save it for our guild house right now. So.
Oh, cool. All right, maybe I'll join you. Have better luck being a non-noob.
Yeah.
than I was in Destiny. So, now one of the things that I've been playing and I've been really enjoying, it's an episodic adventure based on Game of Thrones. And the new one, episode 2, Game of Thrones, The Lost Lords, just came out, which, I am absolutely really, really loving. It's a really cool game. They really amped it up with episode 2. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. And, you know, episode 1 was good, but it was kind of like, I don't know, I felt a little bit too much in the shoot, if you will, where my choices didn't really affect the ending too terribly much. But in episode 2, they really kind of expanded it, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. And I noticed, James, you just, you and Shella were playing Life is Strange, which is another episodic adventure. So what was Life is Strange about? And then let's talk about the allure of the episodic adventures, which are just crazy these days.
Yeah, I mean, Life is Strange was actually developed by the same people who developed Remember Me. But it feels like, I mean, although Remember Me had its moments, this feels like a kind of, like a fully more realized vision. And Life is Strange is essentially an adventure game where you're put in the shoes of an 18-year-old girl who is studying, I think it's either a university or community college, but I'm not so familiar with the American education system, so so that's my bad, really. But it's really interesting because, I mean, I don't want to give away too much, but you eventually discover that you have the power to rewind time, but only by, like, a short period. And so you're in this kind of world of, university and college, but there's also this abstract dream that the main character, who's called Max, she kind of has, and it's kind of linked to the town somehow. And it's this kind of thing where you have all of these different characters, like, you know, dozens of them, that are all interweaving into the story. And you have certain moments where you can choose what to do, but you actually have the choice to go back and rewind and see, like, the instant of each eventuality play out, for a little bit. After a while, it auto-saves, and you can't go back and reverse that decision, because the time, you can't reverse that much time. But it's really interesting, because it's that kind of thing of, oh, if you had the chance in real life to go back and redo those decisions, life would be so much easier. But there's actually a really, like, kind of profound thing that happens with the game, because you actually do it, and you realize that, although it solves one problem if you rewind, the situation, it actually means it will make life really difficult for someone else or even the main protagonist. And so you kind of realize that having that sort of power is actually equally as horrible as having to make the decision in the first place. And so it's one of those games that if you like wordy games and it's, you like narrative driven games, then I'd actually say so far I think it might end up being something that could be called a masterpiece. Even it's got those elements there that you can see they're putting little threads in that first episode that are going to come back later on. I mean, it's early days to call it, but I was really blown away by it. Actually, it was really, really, really great.
Wow, that's really neat. Now the interesting thing, I mean, obviously when I'm playing the Game of Thrones episodic adventure, and I think the appeal of the episodic games is for folks that really, really like story. I mean, like, for example, I know Michael got tired of Destiny. You know, there wasn't that much of a story to it. I know that wasn't your main thing, but that was kind of a problem with Destiny. It's hard to tell a story in a shooter, I mean,
they There are ways of doing it, and it had the beginnings. I mean, it had the beginnings of being the capability of it, but I found out actually just recently that somewhere along the lines of the development of Destiny, they fired the story writer. And so, you know, that obviously took the story off track, and they must have just focused more on the gameplay, which is, you know, a bummer. Oh, well, I want to love the game. I'm just... can't anymore. So, yeah, it's no episodic games are a lot of fun for people who do like story. You're right. I personally don't like it because I can't wait. I hate waiting. I'm that person who would, if I had the ability to make every author in the world work like a slave driver for me, I would do it in a heartbeat. With no remorse or, you know, or no remorse or hard feelings at all, because I'm the person who can read a 1,000 book page book in a day, and so I always want the next part of the story.
You are the guy that does a book review every freaking week, so you must read an awful lot.
That's the backlog too. So
anyone here ever read Misery? Stephen King's Misery?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
I tend to stay away from Stephen King. So.
He is the male version of the character, the one who ties up the author and makes him write a new story just for her.
I was going to say, you kind of remind me of Douglas Adams' editor, because apparently the reason why there's a lot of kind of long sentences in it is because Douglas Adams' editor would actually lock him in a room and tell him he couldn't come out until he, like, finished the book, so...
So he made it as long as possible. Wow. So Michael, you're saying you don't like the episodic adventures because you can't after episode two is done, you don't want to wait until episode three.
Right, or you know, episode one is like, okay, cliffhanger. Dang it, I don't want a cliffhanger. I want the next part of the story right now. I'd prefer to have a complete game, or a game that I know is going to be, you know, that have something to keep me coming back other than just a story.
I suppose you could wait until all, like, five or six episodes were released.
Yeah,
and
The Walking Dead, like, I've been hearing great things about it, but I've been keeping away from it just because I know the story's not done. And so I'm going to wait until it's all done, and then I'll start playing it.
I see. Well, the anticipation aside, because Telltale does, I don't know if you'd call it a poor job, or maybe it's a brilliant job, but they don't really like say, okay, episode three is going to be out in, you know, March 25th. They just kind of like they make you wait some preordinate amount of time that you don't know what it is, and then all of a sudden they're just like, okay, here it is, you know. So you
out of the blue.
You don't really know. But that said, my point was, I think that, I mean, I don't know, and this is what I want to ask you guys, if you guys agree or whatever. I think that in terms of storytelling, I don't think there's any genre in the game industry that allows developers to tell stories as much as those type of episodic adventures. Where, I mean, we had it somewhat with, like, let's say with BioWare did
with Mass Effect and Coder.
Right, exactly. And I mean, that was kind of cool. I mean, even Dragon Age in a sense.
Can I jump in, John, if that's okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of weird. I think it's more to do with an outlook kind of, and a developmental perspective, and, you know, it's going to be really cynical, but kind of a profit margin kind of thing. Because I think that the type of stories that a lot of episodic gaming studios are making are mainly because they're not ones that major publishers would be willing to take a gamble on, for the most part. And I think that they do it because it's a cheaper way of doing it, and that means that they can do it one episode at a time, you know, wait for it to be done, then okay, right, let's go on to the next one. And I think that, I mean, there are, you know, AAA games which do have, you know, amazing stories that are told, you know, just as well. I mean, it's interesting with shooters, because I think one of the shooters that actually had a really good story was Spec Ops The Line, which came out a couple of years ago. That was amazing in terms of its narrative. And you know, but I think sometimes it's more that people are a bit afraid of banking on certain narratives and like that, when they can sort of just serve up the same stuff again and like not rock the boat too much. I mean, not always, because obviously Naughty Dog have always, you know, for the last few years have done really great narrative stuff, but I think it's probably more linked to kind of profits and kind of predictions in terms of how well a game is going to do, I think, usually. But that's just my perspective.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, Neil, in Dying Light, would you say that there's a would you say that there's a story that's presented as well?
Absolutely,
that's interesting.
And it's a lot like English shooters with stories. It's like Far Cry. Far Cry is a shooter that does have an amazing story with it. And honestly, the best way I can describe Dying Light is Far Cry 2 plus Mirror's Edge plus Dead Island. So you have that Far Cry, like it. You can tell it has like the Dead Island kind of environment with the weapons and all that, and the Mirror's Edge with the parkour running, the free running, and all the acrobatics. But there is that Far Cry feel to it, the way the story's presented, the way you meet the characters, the way they have you. You can walk around and go find objectives and just maybe just walk around and just go beat zombies over the head with a pipe wrench because you have nothing else better to do with your time. It's presented in a very, very Far Cry 2, Far Cry 3 manner. And I think that's what bolsters the gameplay of it. Because going back to what James and you guys were talking about with the episodic games, I think the way you guys are comparing them is a bit tilted because of the way comparing stories. Because if you look at it, most of these episodic games are lacking, like, you know, open world, complex combat systems and all that. So they have, yeah, we have a little bit of time, which is it's all story. It's pretty much an interactive novel. With game graphics.
It's a visual novel turned American,
so to judge it off of just story, it's going to have an advantage because that's all it is a story. Mm-hmm. So we got to balance kind of fairly with these. Me personally, I'm on the fence on them because, I mean, I played a couple episodes of Walking Dead. It wasn't bad, but it wouldn't be something I'd go out and buy. I managed to get the first two seasons because first two episodes because they were on sale for a free download on over Xbox Live. So I was like, yeah, why not?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting thing. And I think there's a really interesting point because I kind of want there to be that middle ground between the narrative story that you get in episodic gaming, but also putting it in a format which is, you know, got that playability to it. And, you know, I mean, it's that kind of thing of, I mean, I think there are odd games that do it. I think The Last of Us was one of them where it had really, you know, great gameplay, great moments of tension where, you know, you could sort of go around in it, but it had that narrative that was also to play for as well. And I know what you're saying as well, because, and I don't doubt it. And I totally, you know, I can totally see why some people would just go, hey, this is just like, you know, reading a book. I want to explore like that. But I think, if anything, I think games will become, I think, have the potential to still go somewhere by marrying those two kind of perspectives into like a more seamless way of doing it. You know, I mean, weirdly enough, I actually, maybe not so much story, but in terms of dialogue and character scenes and all that, I actually thought GTA 5 was really good at that.
GTA is pretty good at the storytelling sort of thing. It doesn't, I mean, it's not a serious story. It's, you know, it's GTA for, you know, God's sake. It's not serious at all. You've got the F-bombs dropping everywhere and the, you know, just the crazy people. But, I mean, it's got that storytelling where it's fun to play at the same time as it has a intriguing and I don't want to say enthralling because that's the wrong type of word, but, enticing, that's it. Enticing sort of story where you just want to keep playing it, but it's also fun to do.
Yeah. What I was gonna mention after hearing you guys talk is maybe the open world games like GTA. Actually, it's funny you guys brought it up because I was gonna bring that one up too because I thought the story missions and the side missions and stuff had interesting stories certainly, but because it was open world. And I think a lot of these open world games have this advantage is it kind of, and this is an advantage that I guess games would have over books and novels, because obviously a novel can't give you an open world. But like with GTA, it's kind of like, yeah, you can follow the story and the story's good, but because it's an open world, you can kind of go out and create your own story. You know, you go out and be like, you know, I want to go out and drive around in you know these cool stolen cars that I see, or I want to go out swimming in the water and you know try to find a shark or something, or you know try to start a riot down on the plaza or something, you know, and you know you end up with these funny, amazing little weird stuff that happens that's kind of would make for great stories, but they're not really planned, you know, you kind of created them yourself.
Yeah, Yeah, sorry, no, you go.
Like my brother, a big Grand Theft Auto fan. Almost all of his stories didn't come from, oh, dude, this is what happened in his story. It was, hey, dude, I put in flying cars. I got a tank to fly. I got the cops after me. Look!
I think that's why, like, I'm really intrigued for The Witcher 3 this year, because that series started out as a more linear affair with some awesome kind of player choices and, you know, in a very unexpected way. Like, it wasn't like, oh, good choice, bad choice. But then now they're putting it into an open world. I'm wondering if they're going to actually kind of take it a step further. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I want to see The Witcher 3's open world, because the Witcher kind of had fake open worlds in the past. It had, it had, here's a map area for you to walk around in, kind of like a Dragon Age open world, where it was like, you know, the levels themselves were open, but the world itself wasn't really an open world.
Yeah. So it still kind of had a filtered kind of structure, like, mm-hmm. okay, here's the sandbox, but you can't go out of the sandbox, you know.
Well, here's a series of sandbox that are linked together, yeah. you know, by a map, basically. So, interesting. All right. Well, cool, guys. It sounds like in general we're all having a lot of fun here in the first part of the year. how do you think that? Let me just make this as a final question, because I haven't had a final question in a while. Put you guys on the spot. But how do you think the first couple months of the year in terms of new games and games to play and stuff compares to previous years? Are we off to a better start than in the past, or regular start, or is it disappointing? And we'll let Neil go first on this one.
I think we're about a normal year, better in some ways, like, you know, worse than the others, because we don't have a lot of the, you know, starting out, we don't have a lot of good role-playing games to start out this year and all that, like our console-based RPGs, not MMOs, Michael.
Yeah. Like Lightning Returns, just a good one from last year that came out quarter one.
So that was a good start, but at the same time, the horror industry is growing and it's getting stronger with Evil Within finishing up last year and now Dying Light coming out this quarter. It looks like we're doing a lot better for a start out in a horror quarter, because normally they wait till like October, fall, and all that, but actually started out in spring and that was worth it. But of course, it's going to come down to what's going to hit in fall. But this summer, I think we're better in some spots, a little bit worse than others.
I'd have to agree with that. Definitely for the horror series, everybody's been raving that, I know. Everybody's loving Dying Light. I personally stay away from it because I just don't do zombie games anymore. That's a story for another time. I think that Neil's right in that the RPG scene has been lacking so far. Now, I've heard great things about the Tales of Zestria. Unfortunately, that was released only in Japan, so it's not West yet. It's not come to the West yet. So I'm hoping that it comes soon rather than later. Yeah, that's me.
No problem. James, what do you think? How's this year going so far?
I'd actually say I'm going to be the dissident voice in the room, but I actually think it's one of the best starts we've had to a year. I mean, I think with horror, I'd actually say that horror's been thriving for like the last 5 years, mainly due to the independent scene. But this year, especially with horror, there's loads of stuff. And we've had the remasters of the GameCube remake of Resident Evil, which is really great because it didn't get such a look in when it first came out on the Cube, just because the Cube didn't do as well as the other competition. But then we've got Soma, that's probably going to come out this year from Frictional, who made Amnesia, The Dark Descent as well, probably sequels to Outlast. I know there's a Five Nights at Freddy's 3 that's coming out, and although it's like the third game, it's still really, really good. And I think overall in the year, it's actually going to be one of the best, because in every corner of the industry, like whether it's the real big AAA stuff or the indie stuff, there's actually seems like there's going to be a lot that's going to hit that's really big and also meant for the new consoles as well. So yeah. I'm actually really, really excited about this year.
Cool. All right. Well, great, guys. Well, thank you so much for showing up today and tearing yourself away from the cool games that you've been playing.
Yeah, getting into my power leveling time, ain't it? That's okay. It's completely okay.
You don't have You don't have a bot to do that for you?
I would never stoop to using a bot for that. It's no fun.
I know. I hear people do that.
There are people that do that. I just, for games like, I mean, I suppose if you already went through the story, but with like Final Fantasy, just a quick thing, you can make one character and do everything in the game. So you can, don't have to experience the story multiple times.
Right, right. I just pay poor people from third world countries to play Destiny for me while I'm not around.
So that's how you got up to that level. Okay.
That's right. That's the only way I got beyond level 30, man.
Nice and ethical, John. Nice and ethical.
Hey, they need jobs, and I need a higher level character.
John, we've been over this. Ohio is not a third world country.
All right, guys. So you can join us, all our listeners. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/gameindustry. We are on Google+, also at Game Industry. We are on Twitter. Our Twitter feed is at Gin Lounge. So we'll be tweeting stuff about the show from there. And we're also on Pinterest and a bunch of other places. And, of course, you can always find us at gameindustry.com. Thanks for everybody for joining me today. Thank you to my guests. And we will see you next time. Right here in GameIndustry.com's The Gin Lounge, probably going to be talking about what nominations made Game of the Year. So exciting stuff coming up. We'll see you then. Until next time, see ya right here at GameIndustry.com's The Gin Lounge.